documenting the crisis of our republic, waging war on the new world order. This is Govern America. Govern America.
From just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, trying my best to climb out of the basket of deplorables, and broadcasting live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2, this is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks, your host here for the next 3 hours. Nice to have you with us as we once again document the crisis of our republic, the undermining of our national, state, and individual autonomy. Today's the 17th of September, 2016, and with greetings to all the folks all across America, around the world. We're glad to have you with us once again here in another edition of Govern America. It just never ceases to be a very interesting show, the election and everything else. I'm going to try my best to get to other things today on the show. I don't want to spend too much time talking about the Hillary and the election and all the stuff that's going on. Although, frankly, it's just, you got to cover it, folks. You got to cover it. First of all, right off the top, we've talked a lot on this broadcast about the fact that the organ industry, and I want to use that terminology, the organ donation, how would you say it? You know, you donate your organs after you die. This whole thing has really become quite a scam. And we talk about this from time to time on this broadcast because I think it's important for people to know. The other side, the people that are involved in this, including governments, are concerned that people are going to find out about it because it can adversely affect whether or not people actually donate organs. I mean, if you think that your organs are going to a commercial purpose rather than really going to save people's lives, as they tell you they are, then you'd be a lot less likely to donate them. Well, that's what the Orange County Register found out back several years ago now when they did an investigation in April of 2000. And this is many, you know, 2000, the year 2000, many, many years ago. And yet, the beat goes on, ladies and gentlemen. I'm bringing this up for a reason, but just to refresh your memory just a moment, I'll share a few paragraphs of this article that we have up on Sweet Liberty. American businesses make hundreds of millions of dollars selling products crafted from donated human bodies, even though it is illegal to profit from cadaver parts, an Orange County Register investigation found. They said cadaver skin puffs up the lips of fashion models for $1,050 a shot. Dentists use ground bone about 200,000 times a year to treat their patients. Glossy catalogs advertise 650 products made from body parts. A single dead body yields raw materials. Think about that, ladies and gentlemen. Raw materials. We're talking about people here. But raw materials, a single dead body yields worth tens of thousands of dollars to businesses whose stock is traded on Wall Street and to nonprofit agencies that obtain the parts for them, records and interviews show. Nowhere in this country, are grieving families told that their gifts fuel a fast-growing industry predicted to hit $1 billion within 3 years. I don't know what it is now. As I said, this article was put out in 2000. Neither are the millions of Californians who put a pink dot on their driver's licenses indicating their willingness to donate body parts. Quote, people who donate have no idea tissue is being processed into products that per gram or per ounce are in the price range of diamonds, unquote, said Arthur Kaplan, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania Center for Bioethics. The products enhance millions of lives, according to industry trade groups. Cadaver tendons help athletes burn or return to the playing field. Slings crafted from human skin solve bladder troubles. Corneas prepared for implant allow the blind to see. I won't go on with this. I'll put the link for this article in the show notes again. Why am I bringing this up? Because now, out of The Guardian, just a couple of days ago, Actually, Wales, it wasn't a couple of days ago. I see now that it was November 2015. It doesn't matter. It's still relevant. Wales switches to organ donation opt-out. Now, why do you think they would want to do that, ladies and gentlemen? Consent for organ donation switches from opt-in to a soft opt-out in Wales. The Labour-led Welsh government claims the law change could lead to a 25% increase in the number of organs available. And they go on and on to talk about this in this article about how, and that was last year. Now, this is the current one here. This is from The Independent. September 14th, organ donations set to become automatic for Dutch people unless they opt out. Do you see what's going on here? Given the background of the businesses, the fact that this is a business industry, a quiet industry that's being fed by unknowing, unwitting, duped people, well-meaning people, but duped people, they're donating your organs. You folks out there are donating your organs, and it's not going necessarily to save lives. These body parts are going to be ground up. They're going to industry. It's unbelievable. Dutch MPs have voted for a yes unless, quote unquote, yes unless system for organ donation in the Netherlands, which could see people become donors unless they specifically choose to opt out. MPs voted in favor of a draft bill on Tuesday that, should it become law, will see people added to a register of organ donors, unless they request to be removed from it. DutchNews.nl reported. A total of 75 MPs voted for the bill and 74 voted against it. It will now be considered by the upper houses of parliament. So it goes on from there. Of course, no mention anywhere that this is an industry that's being fueled by these by these donations. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. But I just thought I would point that out here at the top of the show. A lot of other things going on here. We see from Biz Journals, San Antonio chosen to participate in global economic program. We have a lot of things going on in this regard. San Antonio is one of the six cities selected to participate next spring in the 7th America's Competitiveness Exchange on Innovation and Entrepreneurship. Now, we told you folks repeatedly on the show that you got to keep your eye on the Organization of American States, because it is my contention that the OAS is the Western Hemispheric version, the West's answer to the European Union. In other words, our version of, the European Union. And they're very involved. They're involved in stuff, and we got to keep an eye on what they're involved in. Now, this program, hosted by the U.S. State and Commerce Departments, they say, in coordination with Mexico and the Organization of American States, brings together decision makers from the Western Hemisphere and other parts of the world to explore global and regional partnership and economic development opportunities that could strengthen international innovation and entrepreneurship. Other cities selected to participate in the program, which will run from April 2nd to 7th, include Austin, College Station, Fredericksburg, New Braunfels, and San Marcos. U.S. Assistant Secretary of Commerce and Economic Development Jay Williams said in a statement that government officials selected the Texas cities so that they could highlight the innovation happening in the Southwest and leverage Commerce Department resources to facilitate more trade and investment opportunities in the region. So, a lot of partnershiping going on here in the West. Over the last year, the Texas cities worked in unison with the State and Commerce Departments on a proposal to the federal government, which then presented in an application to the Global Committee of Experts headed by the Organization of American States. Ambassador Neil Parson, Executive Secretary for Integral Development for the Organization of American States, said the America's Competitiveness Exchange on Innovation and Entrepreneurship is a valuable regional platform that can help facilitate long-term partnerships and sustainable economic development. And there you have it. Anyway, that's from Biz Journals and Organization of American States. Now, we're going to be forced again to talk about this so-called election. And I want to say so-called because is the fix in? We talk all the time on this broadcast about whether the elections are rigged. I believe they are rigged. I believe they can be rigged. I believe that there are many ways to rig an election, and certainly with computerized voting systems, it's a lot easier to rig an election. The point is that now we have the major media talking about how the elections can be rigged. Now, why would that be, ladies and gentlemen? I've asked this question on the broadcast in recent shows. Why now? Why are they, after all these years, we in the truth media have been talking about the fact that our elections are monkey rigged. Why has the media suddenly discovered this issue? I remember back when I worked at the commercial CBS affiliate here in, close by near Lansing, Michigan, in Lansing, Michigan. I actually took a reporter into the control room, and with his pad, and you know, he had his pad, because I told him I got a story tip for you, and I proceeded to explain to him and show him articles and what have you, calling into question the integrity of our election system. I showed him computer, Pandora's Black Box. Did it really count your vote? That's another article that's up on Sweet Liberty. But I showed him a lot of other things as well and said, this is a story idea, you know, because it was about election time. And I said, you know, when you go into your meeting, because every day they would have a meeting in the newsroom and they would discuss what stories, you know, and reporters all had a chance to pitch their story. And I said, here's a story for you to do. You need to do this because people need to, you know, be asking questions about whether the computer, you know, whether it. So he wrote all, he was interested. His name was Mike Lowe. Very nice fella. He was very interested in it. He was wanting to be at some point, I think he was going to school to be a lobbyist, if I remember correctly. But he was very interested. I believe his beat was a capital or something. I don't know. It's been long enough now. It doesn't matter. Anyway, the point is, he went in and pitched the story. And they, not one of them were interested in doing that story. And I've often thought about it, and I probably should have asked him, why would they not want to be interested in this? You know, we're told that the fundamental part of our democracy, and that's what they call it, even though constitutionally our government is not a democracy. Thank you very much. But we're told we live in a democracy, and we're told that a part of that quote-unquote democracy or democratic process, fundamental to that, is our duty or our obligation to go out and vote. That's what we're told. But what good does that do if the whole process is being undermined by fraud? And that's the problem. So why wouldn't the media want to do a story like that? Well, we don't want to affect voter turnout. If people think the process is rigged, then people will quit coming out. Yeah. Or maybe the thing might actually get fixed, huh? Anyway, I went down a bunny trail, but my point in bringing this up We got the media now questioning the integrity of our election systems. Why, ladies and gentlemen? Well, I think I have the answer. First, TheHill.com, August 16th. Can the 2016 election be rigged? You bet, it says. It says Donald Trump has said publicly that he fears the next election will be rigged. Based both on technical capability and recent history, Trump's concerns are not unfounded. Oh? Really? You mean he's not one of them whack job conspiracy theorists? They say a recent study by Stanford University proved that Hillary Clinton's campaign rigged the system to steal the nomination from Bernie Sanders, which, by the way, due to her poor health, may end up going back to Bernie Sanders. It's my understanding the Democratic National Committee met just a few days ago and made the decision that if Hillary has to bail or drop out because of her health or whatever other reason, they're going to put Bernie Sanders back in there. Unbelievable. This whole thing is played out like such a, it's almost like this never-ending drama. Anyway, what was done to Bernie Sanders, they say, in Wisconsin is stunning. Why would the Clintons not cheat again? Now, this is The Hill. I don't know what the leanings of The Hill are, but it's pretty remarkable to hear the establishment media, talking about how the Clintons cheat all the time. The issue here is both voter fraud, which is limited but does happen. Oh, really? It's limited? Boy, is this person either stupid or very naive? Anyway, an election, voter fraud and election theft through the manipulation of the computerized voting machines, particularly the Diebold/PES voting machines in wide usage in most states. Politico profiled a Princeton professor who has demonstrated how the electronic voting machines that are most widely used can be hacked in 5 minutes or less. Robert Fitrakis, professor of political science in the Social and Behavioral Sciences Department at Columbus State Community College, has written a must-read book on the strip and flip technique used to rig these machines. Professor Fitrakis is a Green Party activist. A computer hacker showed CBS how to vote multiple times using a simple $15 electronic device. To be very clear, both parties have engaged in this skullduggery, and it is the party in power in each state that has custody of the machines and control of their programming. Anyway, it goes on from there, and I'll put this in the show notes as well. But we got the major media now telling us how the whole process, how the election can be rigged, which, again, I say, why? Well, here's why, ladies and gentlemen. We got revealed now, National Public Radio says another election day first. Remember I was talking about the Organization of American States? Well, they say OAS will observe U.S. voting. The upcoming presidential election will mark a surprising first. Yes, a woman will be on the ballot as a major party nominee, but in addition, for the first time ever, the Organization of American States is sending poll observers to watch as U.S. voting takes place. So we're going to have international monitors, ladies and gentlemen, because we can't go it alone. We can't possibly have an election here in the United States by ourselves anymore. We got to have our international partners involved. What this is, ladies and gentlemen, is an end run around sovereignty. An end run to, let's just say the OAS finds fraud. What are they going to do about it? What are they going to do about it? Where's the enforcement mechanism for the OAS to do anything about any fraud that's going on here in the United States? And this is the thing that really bothers me about certain people who call for international solutions for other purposes. Back a while, there was a fellow I was following He was, I forget his name, but he was exposing a lot of historic injustices to the native, you know, the Indian population in Canada. And he was, I kind of liked the guy. I thought he was a good guy until he got to a solution. And that was some kind of international criminal court that he was submitting his case in. And I think it was in the Netherlands. He was going to present his case to the International Criminal Court in the Netherlands. And I said, oh, okay, here's where this is going. And we don't want international anything involved with anything, ladies and gentlemen. This is not a solution. But this is where a lot of these people go. And it's really very unfortunate, to say the least. So I just thought I'd point that out as well. And then we have this from the Washington Times. Ironically, the major media, reporting on the major media, Americans' trust in news media sinks to all-time low. Now, gee, isn't that interesting? People are finally waking up. What year is it? 2016? They only had supposed to have it in the bag by now. But the media continues to lie, and people continue to quit trusting the media. This is a long time coming. They say confidence in fairness. Well, you know, and there's a real solution to this, by the way. Turn it off. Just quit watching it. You know what? If everybody turns off CNN, CNN dies. That's the solution, ladies and gentlemen. Turn it off. If the advertisers can't reach their audience, the advertisers will drop. Or the prices will continue to drop until the advertising will be free, which means they won't be able to pay their staff, and the whole thing goes belly up. That's what needs to happen. CNN, Fox News, ABC, NBC, CNN, MOUSE. You know, all the alphabet soup letter organizations that purport to tell you the news. A major pollster has some stark news. Americans' trust and confidence in the mass media to report the news fully, accurately, and fairly has dropped to its lowest level in Gallup polling history, with 32% saying they have a great deal or a fair amount of trust in the media. Only 32% say that, ladies and gentlemen. You know what that tells me? That's a tremendous opportunity for our side. Finally, we're making headway. Finally, people are seeing it for what it is. These outlets, these networks are propaganda outlets. Mind control, ladies and gentlemen. They say this is down 8 percentage points from last year, according to Art Swift, an analyst for the Gallup poll, which first asked the nation to weigh in on the press in 1972. Over the history of the entire trend, Americans' trust and confidence, he said, hit its highest point in 1976 at 72%. In the wake of widely lauded examples of investigative journalism regarding Vietnam and the Watergate scandal. And that's the end of his quote. The sentiment has fallen slowly and steadily and has consistently been below a majority level since 2007. Well, gee, why could that be? Since 2007, well, that was right before the big housing bubble collapse. You mean they lied to us about the financial system? Maybe that had something to do with it. Maybe people started to see the cracks forming, and they realized that they've been told how great everything is. They say Republicans who say they have trust in the media has plummeted to 14% from 32% a year ago. This is easily the lowest confidence among Republicans in 20 years, the analyst noted. Among Democrats, the number is 51%. Among independents, it is 30%. So, there you go. Now, Hillary Clinton turning a corner here. Of course, got a lot of heat for her comment last week about, the basket of deplorables, and what a stupid thing for her to say. Insulting the people that you're trying to win over. Yeah, what a great job, moron. In case you missed it, here, this was her comment.
To just be grossly generalistic, you could put half of Trump supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right?
Right.
The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it. And unfortunately, there are people like that. And he has lifted them up.
Okay, so most of you have heard that. I just thought I'd play it again for posterity's sake, I suppose. But the point is that we're talking about the media and the undermining of the trust in the media. You would think the media would, across the board, just condemn her. But nope. What do? They actually try to... They try to validate her comments.
All right, let me come to you, Maria. First, just being grossly generalistic seems like it could be troublesome for a candidate. And some have compared this to Mitt Romney's 47% comment 4 years ago. Do you think this was appropriate or even accurate, what Hillary Clinton said last night at that fundraiser?
Well, I think certainly it is accurate what she said about Donald Trump mainstreaming a hate movement and having given way too much influence into his own campaign, people who represent what we've been calling the alt-right movement. She gave a whole speech on this. So, the particulars of what she said are not incorrect. There are white supremacists who support Trump. There are absolutely xenophobic people who support Donald Trump.
All right, I'm going to leave it there. Unbelievable. Can you believe they're defending her on this? That's why the media, that's why the people don't trust you, media. You're partisan, you're biased. You're a bunch of scumbags. We'll be back in bottom of the hour break. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. All right, we're back. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. The website is governamerica.com. That's governamerica.com. My email address, radio@governamerica.com. The chat room's chock full today. You can join them, chat.governamerica.com. That's chat.governamerica.com. And by the way, speaking of the chat room, I want to thank CFR to Hell, who pointed out that the name I was trying to remember a while ago was Kevin Annette. That was the gentleman who was promoting the... and he might be very well-meaning, and I'm not saying that he's not, but seeking international solutions to problems of national significance, ladies and gentlemen, is not what we where we want to be. That's not what we want to do. So, anyway, moving along here, I think I'm going to leave, staying on the media thing for just a moment. We see one thing I did want to point out. Breitbart put out an article, hacked Colin Powell email, Bohemian Grove attendees will vote against Trump. Some support third-party candidate. They say New York, Dateline New York conspiracy theorists are going to have a field day with this one. An email hacked from Colin Powell's Gmail account has him writing that he has just returned from the famed Bohemian Grove, a place where Washington Post once described as where the rich and powerful go to misbehave, and most attendees there will not vote for Donald Trump and find him to be a, quote, disaster. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've taken some heat on this broadcast because I was very, very hard on Trump, and I still think there's a lot of things not to like about Trump. But I stated here that might as well roll the dice. and vote for him if your vote counts at all for anything. And the reason why I changed my mind on this is because I began to see how both the left and the right, everybody who's an establishment globalist, is against this guy. And that alone is enough reason to question whether or not maybe there could be a small chance that he might actually do some good. And then coupled with the fact that many of his speeches sound like me. Many of his speeches are points that I've been making for years. It's kind of hard to be against a guy who's making the same points and no other politician is saying this stuff. So no, I'm not under any illusions that once Donald Trump gets in office, if he makes it, that he will be allowed to or even be willing to. He might get in there and stab the American people in the back just like George W. Bush did. And like so many others did. And I have every reason to believe that he will in many issues. But ladies and gentlemen, look at the flip side. Look at, on the other hand, you have a woman who's telling you she wants sanctuary cities, who's telling you she wants the guns, who's telling you, and who will, by the way, appoint 2 Supreme Court justices and maybe more to the bench during her term. And so I throw up my hands and I say, what have we got to lose? But as long as you take it with the knowledge that don't put all the don't put all the responsibility for saving the country on the hands, on the shoulders of one man. Okay? That's my point. It's not Donald Trump's job to save this country, ladies and gentlemen. It wasn't Ron Paul's job to save this country, those of you who supported Ron Paul. You can't expect one person to do the job of 300 million people, assuming that's really the figure we've got in our population. It's your job. Everybody has a part. Everybody has a role to play. It is not his responsibility to save this country. It is your country. And it is your responsibility. And it is your job, your obligation to future generations to do what you can. And the thing that I've got a big problem with in our movement, if you want to call it that, is the hero worship. This is the huge problem. People get the, you know, they erect these idols. And they go on and on and on about the idols. Oh, they're going to save the day. Superman! Woohoo! No, folks, it doesn't work that way. Restoration of our nation is a very difficult job, and one person can't do it alone. Gee, JFK found that out, didn't he? Not that JFK was perfect either. You go through JFK, all the things he did, the guy was a colossal scumbag, but he did a few things good at the end, didn't he? And what did that get him? You see the problem? So, I just wanted to point that out, though. They're against him. Why are they against him? Because he's going against the globalist grain, I guess. He's the only one talking about the borders, the border problem. He's the only one. Who else has been talking about it? Nobody. Anyway, moving along here. Here we see from The Intercept, Wolf Blitzer is worried. Oh, this is good, folks. This is rich. Speaking of talking about the media and what a bunch of scumbags they are and how, well, just listen to this. Wolf Blitzer was interviewing Rand Paul. And Rand Paul was talking, I think, about Hillary Clinton, Well, no, I take that back. It wasn't about Hillary Clinton. It was about Yemen and the killing that's going on in Yemen. So Wolf Blitzer, you know, is he worried about the bodies that are being scattered and all the innocent lives that are being taken? Is he concerned about it? No. He's worried about the military-industrial complex. Listen to this.
At the very least, it begins the debate of whether or not we should be at war.
Now, this is Rand Paul you're hearing. In a moment, you're going to hear Wolf Blitzer jump in and try to rebut him.
Refueling the Saudi bombers. So we are essentially part of the bombing campaign. We're helping them choose targets, and we are refueling the Saudi bombers that are dropping the bombs. It is said that thousands of civilians have died in Yemen because of this. Yes, we need to have a debate over this, and I don't know what the president will do, but he ought to come to Congress and ask for permission. We've given him no authority to get involved in the civil war in Yemen, and we have to ask the bigger question: is this making it better or worse? Are there more refugees or less? Is there more chaos or less chaos with Saudi Arabia bombing into Yemen? So yeah, it's a debate we ought to have, and no president should unilaterally have this authority without the approval of Congress.
So for you, this is a moral issue, because you know there's a lot of jobs at stake. Certainly, if a lot of these defense contractors stop selling warplanes, other sophisticated equipment to Saudi Arabia, there's going to be a significant loss of jobs and revenue here in the United States. That's secondary from your standpoint.
Can you believe this? This is what Wolf Blitzer is worried about. Never mind the killing, never mind the bloodshed, never mind the families wrecked, the lives destroyed by war. Hey, let's just keep that military machine going a little longer. Hey, let's just keep all them warmongering parts suppliers supplied with jobs. This is what it's about. Ladies and gentlemen, this is our economy. We are living in a war economy. We played that audio back a few weeks ago of Hillary Clinton standing up in the parts plant, which is supplying the military-industrial complex with parts and weaponry and gear. And she says, you are on the cutting edge. You're on the front lines, I think she said, of the next American, how did she put it? Renaissance? Manufacturing renaissance? And you go to their website and it's like, it's all military-industrial complex stuff. Unbelievable. And this is why the media is losing their ratings. Wolf Blitzer. He's all in on the military-industrial complex. Now, there's another thing that CBS did, which I think is also worth pointing out. You know, talking about the problems associated with Hillary's health issues, which we'll get into a little bit today. Hopefully, we won't spend much time on it. But there's a few things I did want to cover. The point is that Bill Clinton was being interviewed after Hillary had her 9/11 collapse. Overheating. She overheated, even though it was only 80 degrees outside, I guess, in New York on September 11th. But she was at a memorial and evidently had one of her spells, and they had to just about carry her out of the thing because she couldn't even walk. The video surfaced of her being helped into her ambulance, her van. Anyway, So Bill Clinton was making the rounds defending his wife, trying to salvage the campaign, because we were getting messages from inside the Democratic National Committee that they were getting ready to have meetings, emergency meetings. They were in a panic. What are we going to do? And it would be logical to think that's what would be going on there. I mean, they would be fools if they didn't worry about what are we going to do. And so emergency meetings, I understand, took place, and that's where they decided to put Bernie Sanders back in if she has to drop out. But Bill Clinton appeared on Charlie Rose, with Charlie Rose. Now, Charlie Rose is kind of doing a dual thing where he's worked for PBS for years, but he's also working for CBS as well now, the morning show, I believe. And so his interviews appear on both networks. Interesting thing is, the copy from CBS ended up differing from the copy that was aired on PBS. First, I'm going to play you the unedited version, because Bill stumbles. He makes a mistake. He says, oh, you know, she's been having this problem frequently in the past several years. This is and then he caught himself and said, well, I don't mean frequently. I mean, you know, it's been, you know, it's rare. Okay, now listen to the unedited version, and then I'll play the edited, what CBS did.
When you look at that collapse, that video that was taken, you wonder if it's not more serious.
Than
dehydration.
She's been, if it is, it's a mystery to me and all of her doctors, because it's frequently, not frequently, that's not, rarely, but on more than one occasion over the last many, many years, the same sort of things happened to her when she just got severely dehydrated.
Did you catch that? So he caught his mistake. He said frequently, and then he says, oh, I don't mean frequently, I mean rarely. Yeah, because frequently is so much closer to rarely than anything else, right? I mean, all right, I shouldn't say right, forgive me. Anyway, moving along, now we go to the edited version from CBS.
When you look at that collapse, that video that was taken, you wonder if it's not more serious.
Than
dehydration.
She's been, if it is, it's a mystery to me and all of her doctors. Rarely, but on more than one occasion over the last many, many years, the same sort of things happened to her when she just got severely dehydrated.
Okay, so they edited the interview to cut out the word frequently. And the way you do this in television is that you lay the audio, and then you take and put an insert edit, what we call an insert edit, over the jump cut, what would be a jump cut, where you cut the audio. And that's what they did. They insert edited a reaction shot from Charlie Rose over that edit to cover it up. It's journalistically dishonest. It's deceptive, and this is exactly what they do all the time. And as a matter of fact, I got a report here from Katie Couric. Katie Couric's now being sued over that deal. Well, we'll get to that in a moment. I don't want to get ahead of myself. Anyway, the point is that CNN, Anderson Cooper, did an interview with Hillary. She was phoning in, and he didn't even acknowledge the fact that Bill Clinton, a good question he would have been able to pose to her, is say, your husband said that frequently you have this problem. And then he corrected himself, but he did say frequently. How frequent is this, Hillary? But no. Anderson Cooper doesn't even acknowledge the mistake.
Let me ask you, your husband said tonight in an interview with Charlie Rose, he said, quote, rarely on more than one occasion over the last many, many years, the same sort of things happened to her, meaning you, when she got severely dehydrated.
So I just point these things out, ladies and gentlemen, to just for any new listener, anybody out there who you want to know how much you're propagandized on a daily basis. Here it is. I'll go to this. There's an anesthesiologist by the name of Anita Gupta. And she gave an analysis on one of the networks about, because last week, I think it was last week or the week before, I theorized that her problem was Parkinson's disease. You know, as I see her shake and see her head nod and bob, it looks very much the way Janet Reno used to do, Michael J. Fox, any Parkinson's patient. And a number of people have weighed in on this also, and they've said the same thing, some of them even whom are doctors. And I want to give Sean a call out, because after last week's show, he sent me a video with Dr. Ted Noel, and he's saying the same thing. And we'll play a little clip from him here in a moment. But first of all, this anesthesiologist, Anita Gupta, she says there's a lot more going on here than pneumonia. Because after Hillary's September 11th collapse, that's what the official story was. Oh, it's a pneumonia. She's got pneumonia. Which was interesting because, first of all, she was just overheated. And next thing you know, she's, the whole thing spirals more and more until, it's pneumonia.
Anesthesiologist, pain management doctor Anita Gupta is with us.
There's a spectrum of symptoms that we see. There's concussion, there's coughing spells, and now a diagnosis of pneumonia. So there's many different things going on that could indicate a much bigger serious medical problem.
Many different things going on that could indicate a much bigger serious problem. And so we know we're not being told the truth. Okay, now, Dr. Ted Noel, this guy has been putting out videos. He has a website, which I think it's called Vidzet, something like that. Anyway, here's some of what he had to say in his analysis.
On August 14, Joe Biggs of InfoWars reported that Secret Service agents had approached him with information that Hillary Clinton was suffering from Parkinson's disease. They've had to take steps to accommodate her disease. They also indicated that they have known she's had Parkinson's disease for an extended period. It has become so severe that they are seriously concerned about her ability to perform the duties of president if she is elected. This is a highly unusual circumstance because Secret Service agents are cleared top secret and are prohibited from disclosing this sort of protected information. The only obvious reason for them to speak to a reporter is that they see Hillary Clinton as an imminent threat to national security because of her disease. Days after InfoWars, Julian Assange of WikiLeaks released Hillary Clinton emails where she directs State Department staff to research new drugs to treat Parkinson's disease. On January 31, 2005, Hillary Clinton fainted during a speech. Secret Service agents kept her from injuring herself as she fell. June 18, 2009, Hillary Clinton broke her elbow, quote, on her way to the White House, close quote. Again, we do not have video. But this is also a bit odd, since she has had 24/7 Secret Service protection for 24 years. She would have to fall at a distance from them with no warning, or they would have broken her fall as they did in 2005. Early in December 2012, Hillary Clinton fell at home, struck her head, and suffered a concussion. Like the 2005 fall, the public explanation was dehydration and fainting. But again, this is very odd. To strike your head requires a complete loss of protective reflexes. Being wobbly from dehydration won't do this. At this point, let's look at the Secret Service Parkinson's disease story. If Hillary has Parkinson's disease, all three falls make sense. In 2005, she could have felt herself starting to have problems and went off stage to get an apomorphine shot for a quick fix. Unfortunately, it didn't work and she fell. The 2009 fall is stranger, but this is well explained by a Parkinson's freeze event. As one Parkinson's sufferer put it, "One minute I'm upright and sailing along. The next, the asphalt is rushing up at me. The alarms sound, the adrenaline spikes, the needles jump into the red, we're going down! Shields up! Shields up!" But there are no shields. 180 pounds of vulnerable flesh and bone crashes to the earth. Hillary probably froze and then fell. Either she recovered enough to avoid major injury as she was falling, or she was simply lucky. Then came 2012 and the concussion. This time, the freeze was unlucky. No one was there to catch her fall, and the damage was major. Now, let's be clear here. This is not a firm diagnosis. I am a doctor, but I am not her treating physician. But everything so far fits the theory. Her, quote, medical clearance letter, close quote, is a typical response managed by a politician who lies about everything. She has not released any records, whatever, from the hospitals where she was treated. In other words, Hillary Clinton is asking us to take her word for it.
So that was his analysis. Once again, that was Dr. Ted Noel. And one of the more interesting conspiracy theories about this event, by the way, that I think, and other people also dissected this past week, is this idea that Hillary Clinton died after the 9/11 event. Now, I don't buy that for one second, but there was an interesting article in the Daily Mail that about a Hillary Clinton lookalike. She apparently has... Well, there's a woman that was an advertising executive She quit her job to impersonate the Hillary Clinton full time because she looked so much like her. Her name is Teresa Barnwell. She's a 61-year-old. And, man, you see, there's pictures. Apparently, she's met Colin Powell. She's met Hillary Clinton herself. There's pictures of them side by side. And I tell you, folks, this could easily be Hillary Clinton's twin sister. It is uncanny. Unbelievable. And after the collapse on September 11th, she went. Hillary went to supposedly to Chelsea's apartment in New York, I guess it's Chappaqua. Anyway, Chelsea has an apartment there, and Hillary went there to supposedly rest and everything. And out of the apartment emerged a woman. Supposedly Hillary, looking great, looking 20 years younger, and not even looking like she had liposuction because she looked thinner. And everybody was saying, well, you know, is this really the real Hillary, or is it this woman that looks alike? And to complicate matters, of course, we got WABC in New York, the television station, which is, I think, an ABC-owned and operated television station, getting on the air, and the anchor misspoke and said that Hillary, you know, we began tonight with Hillary's death.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Sandra Fulton.
And I'm Joe Torres. We begin with the breaking news about Hillary Clinton's death.
Now, I didn't believe that. I thought the media, you know, somebody had put it, that was a hoax video because the video was blurry and you couldn't read the lips of the person talking, the anchor, the Joe Torres. But apparently now, this whole thing has been confirmed. I'm trying to find the article here, but actually there was a somebody actually. Yeah, I'm not. Oh, okay, it's right before me. Okay, McClatchy. They said Torres didn't correct himself, but the broadcaster continued on to report Clinton's health troubles at Sunday's 9/11 memorial. The Democratic candidate was dehydrated, standing outside on a hot day, her campaign said, and video taken of her leaving the site early showed her needing assistance to get into the van. The station told TV Spy that the mistake was accidental. During, quote, this is a quote from a station spokesperson. They said, during a live introduction to a story about the health of Hillary Clinton, Joe Torres inadvertently said death when he meant to say health. It was clear from the context of the story, the reporter's information and graphics on the screen, that Secretary Clinton was alive and recovering. So anyway, it was kind of a odd situation, and people have seized upon that to say, ah, see there, they reported she died. Were they getting ahead of the story? Is that the plan? Are they planning for her death? So, anyway, for whatever that's worth, you can take that and do with it as you will. Anyway, we're almost up to the top of the hour already. The time's going by very quickly. If you want to call in, you're welcome to do so. 1-844-646-8376. That's 1-844-6-GOVERN. Once again, 1-844-646-8376. When we come back, I want to share with you, we're going to turn a corner a little bit, talk a little bit about some hearings on Capitol Hill, the House Oversight Committee. A lot of drama there associated with the Clinton criminality. There's no other word for it. It's criminality. Stay with us. Top of the hour break. Hour number two of Govern America, straight ahead. Just south of the Great Lakes capital city, covering all of North America via satellite, FM micro stations all across the country, streaming live from FEMA Region 5 and Michigan Planning Region 2. This is Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. As it continues to be the 17th of September 2016, and your phone calls are welcome here at 1-844-646-8376. That's 1-844-6-GOVERN. Once again, 1-844-646-8376. I want to get into the stuff that's been going on here at in the House Oversight Committee this past week, and regarding some of the stuff regarding the email scandal. This is just something that just won't go away, but we have to talk about it here because I think it's important, especially given the fact that, as we covered in the first hour, the major media is can't be trusted to deal with things in a correct manner. Anyway, got a couple of calls on the line. Let's go ahead and go to the phones and take the calls. Hello, caller. Who do we have?
Yeah, this is Kent from West Virginia.
Hey, how you doing?
And pretty good. I can't help but think that this whole hoopla, and really it has been a tremendous hoopla generated over her health, is just an intelligence operation. For what purposes we haven't hasn't fully played out yet, but it's intended to get her into the White House. But I'm thinking back to remember when George W. Bush, and it was all this allegation about him being AWOL and cocaine. Remember all that? And it was all this hoopla. And then all of a sudden, out pops this document, and Dan Rather goes on the air and says, I've got the document that's proof. And then it turned out, oh, surprise, it's a fraudulent document. And that whole subject just became, it just disappeared.
Yeah.
And they wiped that whole agenda. And I'm thinking this is something similar. They've done this now.
Yeah. Well, let me just comment on that for just a moment and remember your train of thought. The thought did occur to me that this whole thing could be an operation of some sort, some kind of mind control thing where they're trying to distract from something else. I just can't, at this point, imagine her going along with that, with her coveting the White House, and I certainly can't imagine any way how that would help her, you know, unless they go for sympathy or something like that. But I think national security and the well-being of the nation trumps any kind of sympathy anybody would have for her. I just don't see how this would help her. But
I don't think it's fully played out yet.
It has.
I think we've seen this, and now she's going to emerge as a, like a phoenix, very healthy, I think. But, you know, they've planted these photos of her being helped up the steps, you know, one person on either side. And then they planted a photo of her standing on a bucket, addressing him like an impromptu, and people holding her. And then we have this situation where she is left propped up there against this post, exposed. And let me tell you something. That was the day after John Hinckley was released. You know, that transition from a speaking engagement into a car, I mean, that is very highly protected. You know, you had that situation. I actually saw the Shah of Iran one time in Washington, D.C. And let me tell you something. For the man to come out of a door and get into a car, the security is incredible. And for her to be propped up there, she supposedly fainted from the heat.
Mm-hmm.
She's out there in the sun, exposed, propped up there, all the aides standing around. The car's not ready for her. And then they come up and they pick her up. And then they sort of pick her up and shove her in. And there's a telltale, the shoe left behind. You know, we've seen these instances where they find the passport. The shoe's left behind. And then there's the video. Well, something fell out of her pants legs. That's an operation. There's an operation going on. I don't know how it's going to play out, but there's an operation of some. Then she shows up immediately, fresh. And so there's something going on. I don't know what it is. It's yet to play out, you know. Maybe they've got something on Trump, you know. There's Ted Cruz made an allegation about VD. If you look that up, Trump venereal disease. Ted Cruz trotted out something about, he was on Howard Stern, you know, years ago, sort of, mm-hmm. you know, he's sort of, well, you can read it for yourself, bragging about the venereal disease, minefield. Yeah, and so there's something like, well, Mr. Trump, you show us your health records, and maybe there's something lurking there. Or maybe
I can't imagine how, I imagine every politician in Washington, D.C. probably has a whole myriad of venereal diseases. These people screw like rabbits, you know. So it's, I have every reason to believe he probably does. You know, he's been with a lot of women. I mean, but look at Hillary Clinton. Look at her husband. Look at his conquest, and it didn't hurt him when he was in office. So I can't imagine that hurting him either. But you do bring up some interesting points, and I think this could very well be some kind of a psychological operation. It's entirely possible. Yeah,
And they're setting the stage. They're setting the stage and winding down towards October. You know, and they haven't sprung it, I don't think. And you have to. And one thing, other thing, I think is you remember the way the Reagan Bush team organized for the hostages, and they drilled.
We're having a little difficulty hearing you now, Ken. You're breaking up real bad.
Is that better?
Well, we'll try it. Go ahead.
Yeah. In other words, I just think that they're drawing it out, and you know, I don't think it's played yet. I think there's something, you know. I think there's that whole thing was a whole setup, and I don't think it's played out. And they've got some sort of surprise. Don't know what it is, but just have to be alert to what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I agree with you 100%. It's entirely possible. And I wouldn't put anything past these characters. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. God bless. All right, we're going to move on here. And got another caller on the line. And hello, caller. Who do we have?
You got Alan down here in Texas, Darren.
Hey, Alan.
Hey, you started off your show, and I didn't know if Steve or I was going to get in first. Steve O'Brien, I called him as soon as I heard this. You started off talking about the Organization of American States doing something down here in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And you happened to mention the little burg that we live in, Fredericksburg.
Yeah, and then that
doesn't surprise me that these local good old boys down here are getting ready to stick another red hot poker up you know where to us. But you know, we used to be a quaint little close knit German community down here, and now there's more people from California living here. You know, some of them are good people, but you know, they're moving in here and turning into what the hell they left. You know,
careful,
kind of ruining our little local area. I was wondering what exactly was the plans again for that? Because I was just kind of ramping up, not that I wasn't listening, but I wanted to get the particulars for this so we can try to get something together down here to go to our city council and county commissioners meetings or whatever.
Yeah, let me back up here and because I got out of it. Let's see. Just got to remember where I was at here. Organization of American States. I'll tell you what. Here's what I'll do.
I have to ask you to repeat something.
No, that's okay.
That's kind of important to us down here, and we need to try to get something done about it.
Okay, we got the... live radio, folks. You folks talk amongst yourselves while I attempt to find this. Let's see, that was, you weren't talking about
the... you know, we've got a show on RBN, you know, Steve's show, I kind of co-host with him, and it'll definitely be something, a topic of conversation for tomorrow morning.
I'll tell you what, I'm not finding it now since I dumped out of it. Can we, would it be okay if I left it in the show notes? Because all this stuff is going to go in the show notes anyway.
Okay, yeah, Steve's got computer access, I don't particularly, so if you can just put in there definitely, you know, where you found your information so we can get a little bit more update on, you know, exactly what they're trying to do to us down here.
Yeah,
that
all right.
That would be great, or Steve might even give you a ring or whatever, so.
Okay.
But I'd appreciate that, yeah, because we definitely don't need them encroaching anymore.
No, absolutely not. No, and certainly, as you know, the real fight, everything goes on a local level. This is why you can't rely upon your federal politicians to save your country. It's just like I was talking in the first hour. You know, we got to quit with the hero worship and start focusing on our local governments, our state governments. And in your case, you're trying to remove your state government from the power of the federal government altogether, which is, hey, at this point in time...
Yeah, that would be a great thing.
Godspeed, my friend.
and also something else on the Hillary Clinton thing. I've got a little side angle. You know, as crazy as this world is, what if she really is dead and the DNC is going to appoint Chelsea as the nomination, and she'll not only get the women vote, she'll get the sympathy vote for her mom dying while she's running for president.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're one of those conspiracy theorists, but...
things have happened.
Well, problem is, there's no way in hell Chelsea's going to get appointed because she's just not qualified. They're not that stupid. But they have, my understanding is the DNC has had meetings. They've already had their emergency meeting after the September 11th incident. They had an emergency meeting, and they have decided now that if, for whatever reason, Hillary Clinton has to drop out, it will be Bernie Sanders, which I think is the smartest solution for them because he did have a following. What's that?
Didn't he also? I thought he reverted to the independent party after all that shenanigans. Didn't he? Did he not go back and re-register as an independent?
I don't recall, but I do know he has been actively campaigning for Hillary, and the DNC can actually. It doesn't matter. I guess they can do whatever they want. You know, it's their party, and
true.
And that's been very clearly demonstrated. They don't have to listen to the voters, so. That's why so many people got upset. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. But
all right, Darren. Well, I appreciate you taking
definitely
my call.
Listen.
I'll let you get on with your program.
Yeah, we'll have that in the show notes. And if you have any trouble at all finding it, just give me a ring and I'll dig it up. Maybe I'll dig it up during a break here if I have a chance. So
okay, appreciate it, Darren.
Listen, God bless, man. Talk to you later.
Bye bye.
All right. Moving along here, we got another caller on the line. Let's go ahead and take. This caller. Hello, caller. Who do we have?
Hey, Darren. Art off the grid here.
Hi there. How you doing?
Oh, not too bad. I wish I could keep a steady enough internet connection where I could listen to all my favorite hosts out there in real time instead of having to do the archive thing, but you know, it is what it is.
Well, that's what they're there for, but it's good to have you today.
First off, just real quick comment. Before I get to my issue, Teresa Barnwell, I just got done watching a video of an interview on September 15th of this year, just a couple days ago, on Fox 11 out of Los Angeles.
Okay, before you go on, let me just tell the listeners, because we do have some people just joining us, the UCY.TV people. We were talking about the Hillary Clinton lookalike thing, and this Teresa Barnwell is... a lookalike for Hillary Clinton. And there's a conspiracy theory going on, which I'm not buying into, but the story goes that, you know, Hillary is, you know, she was reported dead, and now this lookalike has taken over or whatever. I don't know. But anyway, there's a lot of talk about that sort of thing, and so that's who this Teresa Barnwell is. So go ahead, Art.
Right. So I'm watching, remember the September 11th issue where Clinton supposedly had to leave. And so I'm watching this interview on Fox 11 out of Los Angeles with Teresa Barnwell.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here to tell you, folks, if you cannot look at Teresa Barnwell and Hillary Clinton and see the difference, believe me, Teresa Barnwell has a much pudgier face. Yeah, there are a lot of similarities. But there, you can definitely see the difference. Teresa Barnwell has a much pudgier face. She does not have the same hairstyle. It's not parted in the same area. No one could look at these two and confuse them.
Okay.
I'm sorry. If you think the two of them look identical, you're a complete idiot.
Well, then I must be a complete idiot, Art, because all I was going on was the pictures that were on the Daily Mail. The Daily Mail had them side by side, and they did look a lot alike. I mean, they looked like they could be twin sisters. So, but,
they,
you know, the article...
very well pass as sisters. Yes, they could pass as sisters, but when you watch the interview, her live, there is definitely a difference.
Yeah, I didn't see the interview.
Yeah, you'd have to watch the interview. You definitely see a difference. But I really wanted to get into this issue of Hillary's physical condition. We know they claim out, you know, she overheated. Okay, if you overheat in 87-degree temperatures, what's going to happen to you when you get under the spotlight on the debate stage? You're not going to be able to hack it. But here's the real thing. I have been dealing with a man. Now, he's gone to Houston to be with some family. But I've been dealing with a man who been having the same issues Clinton did. When you saw that collapsing and everything taking place there at September 11th, trying to get in the van, I've been dealing with him on the same issue. These are the symptoms of a couple different things. One, someone having a stroke. That's exactly how they're going to act. I know this because my dad used to have strokes before he died, and I remember how it was dealing with him. Also, people with Parkinson's behave in this fashion. I know this because I have friends who have passed on who had Parkinson's, and we had to deal with that.
Right.
Okay, so given that, you look at later when the doctors came out and said she had bacterial pneumonia. Now, people don't hear the bacterial part. All they hear is pneumonia. Ladies and gentlemen, there is viral pneumonia, then there is bacterial pneumonia. Viral pneumonia is the contagious form, which is what most everybody is familiar with. Bacterial pneumonia is quite rare and only affects people who have had strokes, who suffer from Parkinson's, and so on.
Mm.
Now, if this be the case and she had bacterial pneumonia, and it is rare, and it only affects people with these certain physical ailments, what does that tell you?
Yep. Well, it tells us there's a whole lot more going on to the story than we're being told. And looking at her symptoms, common sense dictates that there's a whole lot more going on than we're being told. It's fairly
Absolutely.
Obvious. Fairly
and,
obvious.
And so now we come to why, if she is in this kind of condition, do they continue to put her out there? Well, I would say a couple reasons, Darren. We'll see where you think, what you think on this. One, they keep her going. They keep it, whatever they have to do, and they manage to get her in. Then all of a sudden, oops, she's incapable of performing her duties. And now we have who? The vice president steps in, takes her place. Right? Yep, okay, we follow the chain of command. Or she passes before the elections are able to take place, or she's determined not physically capable of whatever. And then I agree with you. Bernie Sanders automatically steps in. Bing, bang, boom. And then, you know, here's another thing. Let's say we're all wrong and Hillary is okay and she gets in there. We know she's praised Obama for his everything that he's done up to this point. And basically, she's come right out and said she wants to continue his policies. Well, he just recently nominated a Muslim for federal court.
Yeah.
What do you think Hillary's going to do if she gets a Supreme Court nomination? This is a lot of things we have to think about here, folks.
Yeah.
We cannot let the Democrats, be it Hillary, Kane, whoever, we cannot let them win.
Well,
and I'm telling you, if
for me,
the
it's,
Democrats...
The issue is the guns.
It's Rick.
The issue is the guns. That's the thing that we have to protect. That is the thing that the American people...
Because she's already come right out.
If they get the guns, I think the roundup of people will be shortly thereafter. I really do.
Yeah.
I mean, they're already trying to round up patriots, people that were involved in the Bundy standoff, people were involved out there in Oregon with the Malheur mess that took place out there. They're already rounding up those people. Anybody that lent support, you know, I mean, so if they get the guns, ladies and gentlemen, all bets are off. And I'm very concerned about that. I really don't want to have to see the second American Revolution. But I got a feeling that may be where we're headed. If, you know, the Supreme Court starts trying to overturn our Second Amendment. And every one of you look back at all of these past decisions that have been favorable to gun rights, they've all been a 5-4 decision. So, now we've had Scalia very mysteriously die. You know?
Yeah.
So, what?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, this really is a train wreck waiting to happen. And somehow, some way, we have got to derail this train before it ever makes it into the station.
Yeah. Well.
We have to. And there is no way, I'm sorry, Darren, there is no way anyone is ever going to convince me that Hillary has a snowball chance in hell of winning. I mean, my God, she had to cheat to beat an openly self-proclaimed socialist. She had to cheat to beat a socialist. What does that tell you? There is no way she can beat Donald Trump in a fair fight. And I'm not overly thrilled with Donald Trump when he comes out. Number 8 on his 10-point plan is to fully implement biometrics.
Yeah, e-verify.
I'm sorry, I got a problem here.
I saw that. Yeah. We don't want e-verify because e-verify is the camel's nose under the tent. I mean, today it's the illegal immigrants. Yeah. Tomorrow it's the rest of us. Why would we think any different?
Well, on Donald Trump's 10-point immigration plan, point 8 is full implementation of biometrics, and point 9 is full implementation of e-verify. They go hand in hand. And how does this work? I mean, think about this. The only way that biometrics for crossing the border is ever going to work, to be able to truly track who's legal and who's not, is for everybody in this country to be chipped with biometrics.
Yeah.
That's the only way that they can make it work. The only way E-Verify works is for everybody in the country who's legal to be in the system. This is, I tell you, if Donald Trump is not part of the fraud and the lie and the agenda, then he's a complete freaking moron.
Well, I don't know.
I'm not ready to accept. I'm not ready to accept Donald Trump as being that stupid.
Yeah, it's entirely possible, exactly. Art. Entirely possible that he fully knows what he's doing, and so we just gotta wait and see.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, got
it's
any?
Like Obama.
You got
it's
anything
like Obama.
Else?
Obama wasn't stupid. Obama knew right from the very beginning what he was doing.
Yeah.
Donald Trump the same way. He knows exactly what he's doing.
And by the way, I will say this, that anything people need to realize, all of this gun control stuff, much of these federal attacks upon our rights, all this stuff can be stopped at a state level. It's got to be pointed out.
Yep.
You know, even a Supreme Court decision or ruling or opinion, they're opinions, really. They're not rules. They're not ruling. But the states created the federal government. The states have the power to rein in the federal government. And if the federal government isn't going to follow the Constitution, even including the Supreme Court, by the way, the states have the right to say, you know what? We don't recognize your decision, your opinion. We don't recognize that. We're going to follow the Constitution the way it's written. And that is that the people, you know, shall not be infringed. The people have the right to carry. The people have the right to keep and bear arms. This doesn't have to be a end-all, be-all, but the problem is if the people out there that are thankfully finally awakening to the fraud of the establishment media, like we were covering in the first hour, if they would actually start to focus on educating their state legislators and officials and putting the pressure, applying the pressure and keeping the feet to the fire, that's what it's going to take to get the job done and preserve our rights. Art, thanks for the call there, my friend.
All right, man. You have a great one.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye. All right, there he is. Art, off the grid. And folks, you're welcome to call in if you want to as well. 1-844-646-8376. That's 1-844-6-GOVERN. I want to get into this House Oversight Committee. A lot of drama on Capitol Hill this week. And I'm just about up to the break already. I'll tell you what, maybe I'll start this after the break because I'm going to run out of time here for this clip. We had Representative Jason Chavez. He was attempting to get information out about the Hillary Clinton email server mess that was going on. And basically, they had subpoenaed the IT people who set up the server, who was running the software and the systems on the server, and attempted to get them to get a timeline of events out, exactly what they knew, who knew what, and where the emails that you remember were deleted, and nothing. He couldn't get anybody. These people all pleaded the fifth surrounding this whole event. They pleaded the fifth. One of them didn't even show up. What does that tell you about the criminal that is on the ballot, ladies and gentlemen, Hillary Clinton, when her IT people are pleading the fifth on Capitol Hill while the campaign's going on? Unbelievable. Bottom of the hour break. We'll continue here in a moment. This is Govern America. All right, we're back. This is Govern America. GovernAmerica.com is the website. That's GovernAmerica.com. And let the music play out a little bit because I was in the middle of looking for something. Before the break, we were going to share with you a little bit of information, a little bit from the House Oversight Committee. I see that somebody put that in the chat room. Thanks, CFR to hell. They posted the whole thing. We'll also have it in the show notes as well. This was something that one of the entertaining things to watch from the standpoint of shaking your head thinking, what the heck just happened to our country? I mean, it gets to the point where you have a major incumbent, well, incumbent in the sense that she's been in Washington for many, many years, current Secretary of State, or immediate past Secretary of State, current one is Kerry, of course, but this woman has been a major player in the United States government, along with her husband, for many, many years. And yet you have all of this quid pro quo, tit for tat, pay to play stuff going on. You've got limitless fraud allegations, but a lot of smoke for there not to be as fire, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, the Clintons are rot with corruption, have been for decades, going all the way back to Arkansas when he was governor there. And so now we have this situation on Capitol Hill where Jason Chavez is trying to get to the bottom of some of this stuff, subpoenaed her IT department. And I'll play you a little bit of this because I think it's very instructive of where we are in America. Key players in the IT department, one of which was Brian Pagliano. He was a key player at the State Department, in their IT department, and also worked privately for the Clintons. And even though he was given immunity by the FBI, Pagliano didn't even bother showing up to the hearing.
Let the record reflect that Mr. Pagliano is not present at the witness table. On September 8, 2016, the committee transmitted a subpoena to Mr. Pagliano's attorney, and the subpoena required his presence here today. Mr. Pagliano is uniquely qualified to provide testimony that will help the committee better understand Secretary Clinton's use of a private email server during her tenure as secretary at the State Department, among other things. The committee invited him to appear with the expectation that his testimony will advance the committee's investigation, which seeks further information about the setup and management of Secretary Clinton's account and other technical aspects of the account. I take my responsibility as the committee chairman seriously, especially the decision to issue a subpoena. It's a serious matter. Mr. Pagliano has chosen to evade a subpoena duly issued by the committee of the United States House of Representatives. I will consult with counsel and my colleagues on the committee to consider a full range of options available to address Mr. Pagliano's failure to appear. It's our understanding that while Mr. Pagliano worked in the IT department at the State Department for nearly 4 years, virtually every single email that Mr. Pagliano had has suddenly disappeared. Mr. Pagliano is also important because he was receiving a paycheck from the Clintons but failed to disclose that on his financial forms. We'll look at the full range of options, but if anybody's under any illusion that I'm going to let go of this and just let it sail off into the sunset, they are very ill-advised.
So Jason Chavez was very, very ticked, needless to say, that this Pagliano, Brian Pagliano, didn't bother to show up. Just kind of blew him off. But the ones that did show up weren't much better, with the exception of one. the meeting continued anyway without Pagliano, with Paul Combata, or Combetta, and Bill Thornton of Platte River Networks. That was the technology firm that managed Clinton's server. They were called in to testify before the committee. Mr. Combata also was given immunity by the Justice Department. And this is how that went.
We have not received any written testimony from today's witnesses. Mr. Combata, do you intend to make an opening statement?
On advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer and assert my Fifth Amendment privilege.
Mr. Thornton, do you intend to make an opening statement?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer and assert my Fifth Amendment constitutional privilege.
Mr. Cooper, do you intend to make an opening statement?
I have no opening statement.
Okay. Please, if you all can move the microphone a little tighter, a little closer, it's just hard to hear. Mr. Combata, we've sent a subpoena to you for your supposed, we had read that there was an immunity agreement. Mr. Combata, did you produce your immunity agreement this morning as required under the subpoena?
On advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer and assert my Fifth Amendment privilege.
Mr. Combata, a couple of questions. Senator Johnson last year released a portion of an August 19th, 2015 internal communication between two Platte River Networks employees. Here's how it read. Quote, "Wondering how we can sneak an email in now after the fact, asking them," meaning them we read to be the Clinton Executive Services Corporation, "when they told us to cut the backups and have them confirm it for our records, starting to think this whole thing is really covering up some shady," and there's an expletive there, "I just think if we have it in writing that they told us to cut the backups, then we can go public with our statement saying we've had the backups since day one. Then we were told to trim to 30 days. It would make us look a whole lot better. As I understand it, you were one of the two employees assigned a PRN in the Clinton account. Did you send or receive this email?"
On advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer and assert my Fifth Amendment privilege.
Mr. Combata, 2 days after that last email you wrote on August 21st, 2015 to an employee of a third-party backup firm called Datto, this is what it said, quote, "We are trying to tighten down every possible security angle on this customer. It occurs to us that anyone at PRN with access to the data partner portal, i.e. everyone here, could potentially access this device via remote web feature. Can we set up either two-factor authentication or move this device to a separate partner account or some other method to allow only who we permit on our end to access this device via the internet?" End quote. If I understand the email correctly, every single employee at PRN could have accessed some of the most highly classified national security information that has ever been breached at the State Department. Can you prove that no other individuals accessed this data or even passed it on to someone else?
On advice of counsel, I respectfully refuse to answer and assert my Fifth Amendment privilege.
Well, one last one here. Mr. Combata, you're an IT guy who's paid by the Clintons. Generally, IT guys don't erase their clients' emails unless they're told to do so. So who told you to delete the emails?
On advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer and assert my Fifth Amendment privilege.
Mr. Cummings, do you have any questions?
Do you all plan to continue to assert your, Ms. Cabetta, Ms. Thornton, do you plan to continue to assert your Fifth Amendment rights? Is that your plan? Is that your plan?
On advice of counsel, I respectfully refuse to answer and assert my Fifth Amendment privilege.
And you, Ms. Flynn?
On advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer and assert my Fifth Amendment.
I'm not going to have any other questions since it's clear that you're taking the Fifth on it. I have nothing further.
Mr. Combata, given that you have indicated that you do not intend to answer any questions out of respect for your constitutional rights, we will now excuse you from the table. Mr. Thornton. Yesterday, Chairman Lamar Smith of the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee released an August 13, 2015 letter from Datto to PRN's attorney, which said this, and I quote, "We have been following the news reports concerning various investigations related to Secretary Clinton's emails, including Platte River's provision of IT-related services to her. We have some concerns relative to data security. Platte has not enabled encryption at the local device. Given the sensitive, high-profile nature of the data, which is alleged in press reports to potentially reside on the Datto device, it may be the target of a cyber attack from a multitude of highly sophisticated and capable entities or individuals. We believe such an event could place the unencrypted data itself at risk, as well as expose both Datto and Platte River systems to collateral damage. In its current state," and it goes on, "the device and the data that is stored thereon," and it goes on, is more vulnerable to cyber attack than Datto believes is prudent under the circumstances. Mr. Thornton, given the vulnerabilities identified by Datto, are you aware of any hacks of PRN's systems?"
"On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer and assert my Fifth Amendment constitutional privilege."
I'd like to just ask you one other question that I can't imagine has any implications on any criminal culpability or anything else. Just a simple question, yes or no, and if you'll answer this one, we'll cut you loose here. Were you interviewed by the FBI?
"On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer and assert my Fifth Amendment constitutional privilege."
You can't answer the question about whether or not you were interviewed by the FBI?
"On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline."
Given that the witness has indicated he does not intend to answer any questions, out of respect for his constitutional rights, we will now excuse Mr. Thornton from the table.
Can you believe this, ladies and gentlemen? Now, that was a long clip, and I let it play out because I wanted you to get the sense of the overall hearing. This is how the whole thing went. I mean, time after time, they plead the Fifth. Now, if there's nothing going on here, move along, nothing to see. Why, pray tell, are the IT people pleading the Fifth? Now, the only person to show up of the three who actually did testify, that didn't plead the Fifth, and was willing to talk, was Justin Cooper. He was a Clinton staffer who set up and worked on the computers, and this is a little bit of what they asked him.
"Here you have some of the most vulnerable secrets in all the State Department, all the United States, people who put their lives on the line for this country, and this data evidently is unencrypted without dual authentication. Mr. Cooper, you told the FBI evidently that you helped set up Hillary Clinton, Secretary Clinton's New York and D.C. residences with an iMac, correct?"
"That is correct."
"Did you ever have to service any of those computers or work on any of those computers?"
"Over periods of time, I did service and work on those computers."
"You did or did not?"
"Did work on those computers."
"Including the one in the SCIF?"
"I don't recall any specific time that I worked on it once they were in the SCIFs."
"So, well, how many did you set up at her home?"
"There was a computer in her office in each of her homes. I've worked in their homes for a period of 15 years.
Okay, let me just jump in here and let you know what a SCIF is. This is one of those highly sensitive rooms. I forget what the acronym is specifically. It's a room that's been certified. They have to be certified as being impenetrable by anybody, any human, or any technological means. And you're not supposed to be bringing personal devices into these rooms. That's forbidden. And this is one of the problems because Hillary Clinton wanted to bring her BlackBerry in, and it was all forbidden. And so she wanted to have a special NSA BlackBerry. And we'll get to that in a moment. But anyway, that's what you need to understand about that, is that these SCIFs that they're talking about here is one of these highly sensitized rooms where Hillary Clinton had, you know, anybody who has national security clearance that is reading classified materials, they go into one of these SCIFs to protect the information, the data, from actually being penetrated from anybody from outside.
And certainly when they were originally set up, they were set up primarily for the use of staff in her homes. And I would use those computers from time to time to print documents. Once they became SCIFs, I don't recall specifically using those computers.
Or servicing of those?
No.
Did you have a security clearance at that time?
No, I did not have a security clearance.
After you left the White House early in... When did you leave the White House?
2001.
2001. Did you ever have a security clearance at any level after that?
No, I did not have a security clearance.
And you had full access to the whole server the entire time that you were working for the Clintons?
Yes, I had access to the server.
And you have no security clearance?
I have no security clearance.
Okay, so I have one more clip on that, and I think this is also very important. He just indicated that he had no security clearance. And here's another thing.
Mr. Cooper, how many people had access to this server?
In terms of as administrators?
I want the whole universe. Administrators, users, the whole bit, the whole gambit.
There were two people who had some administrative rights, myself and Mr. Pagliano. I can't, off the top of my head, tell you exactly how many users there were over the lifetime of the server, but it was less than 20 people.
Was there a remote access login available?
The only remote access login to the server was for myself and Mr. Pagliano.
Was it encrypted?
I can't speak to that. I can't recall.
So you're running it. You don't even know if it's encrypted?
Mr. Pagliano was running it. I was using it.
Did it have dual authentication?
I don't recall dual authentication.
So there's no dual authentication. We're not sure it has encryption. It does have remote access. You have some 20-odd people that can do it. It's intermingled with the Clinton Foundation. Clinton Executive Services, was it also have access to that?
I can't say it's intermingled with the Clinton Foundation, Clinton Executive Services.
You're being paid by them, right? There were people being paid by Clinton Foundation that were accessing and using the system, right?
In part, there were individuals who had multiple job responsibilities for multiple entities within the Clinton world, and some people did work for the Clinton Foundation, yes.
So did the State Department ever contact you or complain or issue any sort of concern?
No, I did not have any concern or...
Mr. Chairman, I have one more question.
Yes, Mr. Duncan.
Mr. Cooper, I understand that in order to make Secretary Clinton's private, insecure email server connect with the State Department's much more secure server, the State Department had to lower its own security settings, at least temporarily, to match Secretary Clinton's more insecure security server. Do you know about that, the fact that she had this insecure server?
That is not something I specifically know about it. I've read accounts of that in the media, but I have no direct knowledge of that.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're going to end up having a lot more of this if this woman becomes our next president, which is a very, very real possibility. I do kind of think that there are some elements of maybe the intelligence agencies, and maybe some other officials that don't want her, that don't like her, and for whatever reason, are fighting for her to not get in there. Some of these data dumps that have come out, some of these, you know, they're blaming the Russians for the DNC hack. What's the likelihood that this could be potentially our own intelligence agencies doing some of this hacking? You know, I found it interesting. TheObserver.com had an interesting story back earlier this year. Hillary has an NSA problem. They say the FBI has been investigating Clinton for months, but an even more secretive federal agency has its own important beef with her. Now, I'm going to skip down and start reading from just the middle of this article. I think this is interesting, kind of an interesting insight into the agency. It says the FBI isn't the only powerful federal agency that Hillary Clinton needs to worry about as she plots her path to the White House between scandals and leaks. For years, she has been on the bad side of the National Security Agency, America's most important intelligence agency, as revealed by just released State Department documents obtained by Judicial Watch under the Freedom of Information Act. The documents, though redacted, detail a bureaucratic showdown between Ms. Clinton and the NSA at the outset of her tenure at Foggy Bottom. The new Secretary of State, who had gotten hooked on her BlackBerry during her failed 2008 presidential bid, according to a top State Department security official, wanted to use that BlackBerry anywhere she went. That, however, was impossible since Secretary Clinton's main office space at Foggy Bottom was actually a secure compartment information facility. And that's what the SCIF is. I had forgotten what the acronym was. That there it is right there. Secure Compartment Information Facility, SCIF. A SCIF is required for handling any top secret plus information. In most Washington, D.C. offices with a SCIF, which has to be certified as fully secure from human or technical penetration, that's where you check top secret email, read intelligence reports, and conduct classified meetings that must be held inside such protective spaces. But personal electronic devices, your cell phone, your BlackBerry, can never be brought into the SCIF. They represent a serious technical threat that is actually employed by intelligence agencies worldwide, though few Americans realize it, taking remote control over a handheld device, then using it to record conversations is surprisingly easy for any competent spy service. And that's something everybody needs to keep in mind. They say here in this article, remarkably, a remarkable admission, but they say your smartphone is a sophisticated surveillance device on you, the user, that also happens to provide phone service and internet access. As a result, your phone and your BlackBerry always need to be locked up before you enter into any SCIF. Taking such items into one represents a serious security violation. Ms. Clinton and her staff really hated that. Not even 1 month into the new administration in early 2009, Ms. Clinton and her inner circle were chafing under these rules. They were accustomed to having their own personal BlackBerries with them at all times. Anyway, they went on to say here that in February of 2009, Hillary Clinton, she entered a request to the NSA, whose directorate had secured a secure BlackBerry for Obama. And she wanted one, evidently, as well. IAD, the directorate, had recently created a special custom-made secure BlackBerry for Barack Obama. And now Ms. Clinton wanted one for herself. And the NSA was not inclined to provide her with one unless that she could demonstrate the need. Because, evidently, it had taken too long. And it was a lot of effort put forth into this, and it cost a lot of money, evidently, to secure one of these devices. Anyway, the NSA didn't want to go through all of that unless there was a real need for it. The quote was that I really wanted to get to. Trying to find the quote to save time here. The State Department has not released the full documentation trail here, so the complete story remains unknown to the public. However, one senior NSA official, now retired, recalled a kerfuffle with Team Clinton in early 2009 about the BlackBerries. Now, this kind of gives you the attitude of the NSA toward the Clintons, and this is really why I wanted to share this. It was the usual Clinton prima donna stuff. The whole Rules Are For Other People Act that I remembered from the 90s. That was the quote. Why Ms. Clinton would not simply check her personal email on the office computer like every other government employee less senior than the president seems like a germane question given without major scandal email gate turned out to be. What did she not want to put on a government system where security people might actually see it? The former NSA official asked, adding, quote, I wonder now, and I sure wish I'd asked about it back in 2009. So anyway, the whole attitude is rules don't apply, we're above the law, yada, 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 and the beat goes on with the Clintons. We're just about at the top of the hour already, and when we turn a corner, I want to get into the Iran deal, this nuclear deal that they were talking about back several months ago now, the State Department had worked on for months, and because in light of the fact that Iran seems to be becoming more and more aggressive toward the United States. And you would think that some kind of deal that was made that was, beneficial to everyone, you'd think that they wouldn't want to do that. So what gives? So we'll get into that some as well. We also find out also that Iran received a lot more cash from the administration than was previously disclosed as well. Free Beacon reports Iran may have received an additional $33.6 billion in secret cash and gold payments facilitated by the Obama administration between 2014 and 2016. So as the American people are losing their houses, going increasingly hungry, looking for jobs, can't find work, and the scumbag State Department and the Obama administration giving tons and tons of money to Iran, for what reason? And what are we getting for the money, ladies and gentlemen? Gotta go. We gotta go to the break, and we'll be back in hour three. Stay with us. This is Govern America. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to hour three of Govern America. This I'm just going to keep on going for those who are listening to the rebroadcast, but we literally are no longer on the air live. We, for some reason, have encountered a problem, and everything just went down, all communications with the outside world, which is kind of interesting because we were in the process of exposing some of the corruption going on, and so I don't know. Anyway, we'll see if it comes back up, and if it can, we'll see if we can reconnect at the bottom of the hour, but I'm going to keep going. Never a dull moment. Anyway, this is hour number three of Govern America. I'm Darren Weeks. It continues to be the 17th of September, 2016. And I was sharing with you a little bit from the information regarding the Iran deal. I wanted to get into that, some of that, as time progresses here. We had this deal. In fact, we talked in previous shows about how the payments that the administration gave to Iran to the tune of $1.3 billion. That was the original figure. Now we find out that the figure is actually much higher. I'm having trouble today because let me just do this. Okay, here we go. Iran cash.
All right, a headline that needs unpacking from the Wall Street Journal this morning. The U.S. has sent around $1.3 billion in foreign currency to Iran. This is the first real accounting of how much money the U.S. has sent to that country. Why? What effect could it have? And what could it mean to the war on terror in a bad way? Tony Blinken, the Deputy Secretary of State, joins us now. Tony, great to have you on
the show. Chris, thanks for having me.
First, $1.3 billion. Can you verify that number? Is that how much has been transferred to date?
Well, I haven't seen the report, but here's what's going on. We achieved a nuclear deal with Iran to prevent it from getting a nuclear weapon that's made us safer, made countries around the world safer. Part of that involved lifting sanctions on Iran, and that freed up money that had been frozen around the world that Iran had in bank accounts that it couldn't bring back to Iran. Now, as part of the deal, Iran is bringing back some of that money, but the overwhelming majority of that money is going into their economy, which is in dire straits. It's not going.
How do we know?
We know. We've seen it. We see what they're saying. We see how they're spending it. And what they've told us, but also what we see, is that instead of going to the military, the money is being poured back into the economy, because this is an economy that was suffering terribly.
Do you think that you could guarantee from the State Department to the American people that this doesn't get filtered into groups like Hezbollah and other terrorist allies that Iran has, that not $1 of it could go there? Do you think we could really know something?
No, we can't say that not one single dollar will go there. What we can say, based on what we've seen so far, is that virtually all of it is going into the economy, not into the military. And the bottom line is this. This agreement that we reached has made us safer. It's put far into the future the day when Iran could get enough material for a nuclear weapon.
So they won't even admit. To make matters worse, I mean, this is just the Deputy Secretary of State on CNN. He was actually admitting that cash payments could go to fund terrorism. It's just unbelievable, ladies and gentlemen. So keep in mind, Hillary Clinton at the State Department, Secretary of State, more of these policies will continue to go. Now, the State Department also won't deny that the nuclear deal encouraged Iranian aggression. We were just talking about the Iran aggression against the United States. Here's a report regarding that.
Well, more than 1 year after the U.S. agreed to that landmark nuclear deal with Iran, the State Department, our State Department, now admits that it may be making that country's behavior even worse. Listen to this.
But you can't rule out that, in fact, this deal has served as a cause for this more aggressive posture.
I mean, I can't rule that out. It's just, Iran, like many countries, has an internal political process that's defined by a lot of different dynamics.
That exchange between R. James Rosen and the State Department spokesman just yesterday, all of this comes amid recent confrontations between Iran and the United States, including Iranian boats harassing our ships last month, and then over the weekend, Iran threatening to shoot down a couple of U.S. military planes that were flying in international airspace.
Okay, so I'll tell you what, I think we got a couple of calls on the line. I think we're back on the air again. We had a problem here. For some reason, we got completely knocked off the internet. I ended up having to completely reboot the router here and everything. So I'll go ahead and take a couple of calls, and we'll see if this works. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Who do we have here?
Hi, if you have me, it's Chris from Canada.
Hey, Chris from Canada. I do have you.
It was you were discussing a little bit earlier. I've been following your thread, and I know you're not doing it for nefarious reasons, but you keep bringing up Trump. He's a better solution than Hillary Clinton. I do have concerns with that, and I want people that are listening to your show to understand. New listeners and people that maybe aren't like the choir, that he's not really a good idea either.
Well, I agree.
We should stop discussing about the lesser of two evils. We've been doing this for centuries, and it's not working.
Well, here's the one thing, Chris, that makes me wonder, and the only reason why. Look, I'm not promoting anybody that's listened to me for years, going all the way back to the 2004, I think, is when I first came on the air. I have always preached the same thing, and that is that both parties are controlled. There's no difference whatsoever, and basically exactly what you're saying, the lesser of two evils isn't going to work. This is the only reason why I think that there's a possibility that Trump could be a little different here, is he's completely going against the globalist grain, and they're attacking him viciously. You look at the foreign affairs, you look at the different think tanks and what they're saying, they're all completely going ballistic against this guy. And that I'm not promoting him as a solution. He's not the solution. I'm just going to say that point blank. But I'm going to tell you right now, I'm concerned that we in the Patriot Movement have come full circle now to the point where we're going to let perfection stand in the way of better. Do you see what I'm saying here? If everybody turns against, if there is a candidate that actually is going to try to secure the border, for instance, and has the potential in his own way to be radical enough to actually try to throw a monkey wrench into the globalist plans, and free trade is the top measure that the globalists have taken. Nothing has destroyed this country quicker. And if he can throw a monkey wrench in that, if he follows through on it, that alone is enough of a reason for me to say, you know what? I'm going to back off a little bit. And so don't misunderstand my position here. My eyes are wide open, man. I totally see what's going on here. But I also see that if everybody who would vote for a candidate who potentially could secure the border and potentially try to monkey wrench this free trade stuff, and we're just going to fold our arms and say, you know what, the whole system's a fraud, so I'm just going to give up on this because the two-party system, blah, 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 we've always voted against the lesser of two evils and it's never got us anywhere, then we're going to end up being our own worst enemies if this guy is trying to actually, if he really means some of the stuff he says. Do you see the problem here?
Well, yeah, and it's the what if. What if he gets in?
Well, yeah, we don't have a crystal ball, man.
We had Harper here in Canada, and then he was really nasty. And then we voted in Trudeau too, which, what are the odds to become Prime Minister of Canada than be the son of a Prime Minister? Huh. Well, I knew this 5 years ago before we even started to get where he is. I knew he would be our Prime Minister. I guessed it. I got it nailed down. And I said, when Harper's out, who is a complete corrupt criminal, who's now working for the United Nations, we got Harper in. And everybody thought, well, we'll vote him in, and everything will be good. But what were your choices? What were your choices? You got an elitist or an elitist, and neither one of them had any clue in real law or politics. I mean, Trudeau, how did this happen? He got voted in for being a snowboard instructor and a part-time drama teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the Prime Minister of Canada now. So that's the options they give you.
Yeah.
And you're getting the same options down there. You got a very rich man who has stolen billions of dollars off the people to build his high-rises through government grants and such. He got his start from his rich father. And then now, and your other option is, somebody that is running the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah.
So,
well,
isn't
I'm
it
not
claim that people just like you're suggesting, like let's, you know, we got to do something. Well, what I would suggest we do is just stop.
Stop what?
We all stop going to work. We all stop paying.
Yeah, well, that's
taxes.
That's not going to happen. That's just not going to happen. It's not realistic. I've been here. Look, man, I've been hearing this ever since I went on RBN. My first broadcast on RBN was June 28th, 2008. And ever since I was on RBN, I got calls like that all the time. People would call in and say, you know, just get out of the system, blah, blah, blah. You can't get out of the system if you're going to survive. You can't. So to say that we just stop, we quit going to work, quit paying tax, yeah, that sounds great. But it's not practical. People have to eat. People have to have a place to live. Even if you live out in the forest, like Art off the grid, not everybody can do that either, because if that gets to be too much of a problem, they'll send in troops and they'll start rounding people up and hauling you off. I mean, some people live out in, the national forest. And I guess there's a rule there that you can live there for 2 weeks and then you got to move. So they move every 2 weeks. But most people, that's not a lifestyle that they're willing or able to do. And what about small children? What about hospitals?
It's not a long term. It's not long term. I know.
Yeah, but it will be long term, Chris. It just won't work.
Beginnings.
People just won't do it.
Well,
we got to have solutions that actually work, man.
This, if you did this for 2 days in protest, 2 days, nobody shows up.
It would do absolutely nothing.
They're going to have to start paying attention to what the people that are supposedly the ones paying their money to have the country run. These elitists are going to start paying attention.
Yeah, I don't think 2 days would do anything. It's just like the national The national gas tax, the gas boycott. I'm sorry? What'd you say?
Well, that was just a number. Two, three.
I've heard people talk about, buying gas on certain days, and, that'll bring the gas price down.
Yeah, support one company and not the other.
Well, that's another thing. I mean, it's not going to go anywhere. It won't do anything. You know, if you want to boycott something, you got to boycott it for good, just like people are doing for Target. You know, right now they're hurt. They've hurt Target big time because they don't like the restroom policy Target instituted. Okay, so you can make boycotts work, but if you buy gas the day before or the day after, they're not even going to notice. I mean, they don't care. But getting to solutions, you're right. I agree with you 100%. Candidates are not going to solve our problem. And this is what I was talking about earlier in the show. People have got to quit focusing on heroes. People have got to quit worshiping and following heroes. Donald Trump is not going to save the country. You're right. You're absolutely right. He can't do, even if he has the best of intentions, one person can't do the job of 300 million. So the obligation is upon the people, and you're not going to accomplish it from the top up, by the way. We have to do it from the bottom up through our local states and our local government, because that's really ultimately where the real battle is. And so I'm not disagreeing with you, man.
Well,
hair splitting.
Municipal level.
Yes.
But the sad part is, and most people are so impatient, they can't wait for it, but if you got to build it one community at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the ground up. And
well, you got to get organized, because even on a local level, and my friend Sam who was alderman, and he actually won the election and became alderman where he is. And, he learned that the corruption is very rot locally as well. He tried to get some things done, and he did accomplish some things, but it was an uphill fight all the way. So if you don't have, first of all, get some good aldermen, get some good councilmen in there and women, and then make sure you've got the grassroots organization necessary to back them. Because really what it all boils down to is it's a numbers game. If you don't have the numbers, they're going to run roughshod over you. But if you increase our numbers enough and get organized enough to apply the pressure, even the state legislators will listen to you if you got enough people there calling them. And usually it doesn't take that many. So just for the record. Hey, appreciate the call.
You're totally on the same page as me, Darren, with my thoughts. But I was, like I said, with bringing, suggesting that Trump comes in, he's better than Hitler. Yeah.
Well, we don't know. We don't know, do we?
We all play the same game. We've been playing it for centuries, and that don't work.
Yeah. Well.
But. I agree. In the line of what you're discussing, if you had to choose,
well, that's kind of where I'm at.
He would maybe slow things down a little bit more than her. But
see, that's the thing is, I look at what she's saying. Yeah, I look at what she's saying, and I look at what he's saying. Honestly, Donald Trump, if I've seen some of the things he said about, Art was talking earlier about E-Verify and the biometric stuff. And I could see, based upon some of the stuff that Trump has said, him advancing the police state in a huge way. Also, I believe he's a Zionist. I think he's a total Zionist. I think he's very supportive of Israel. So you got that problem as well.
APAC and I think the only thing I haven't seen yet is has he been at the Wailing Wall?
I don't recall ever seeing him go there yet. But
okay,
There's still a couple months left, so
yeah,
you may very well. Hey, listen, I got another call on the line, but I got to run. But
okay, Darren, thank you.
Hey, blessings, my friend. Talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, folks, here's another call. Let's go ahead and transition into this one. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Hi, Darren. Dan in Kentucky.
Hi, Dan.
As always.
Thank you.
And I have an idea of what would help this lesser or two evils problem. The problem is thinking in two instead of three. You know, the Russians, I took Russian linguistics in college a long time ago, and the guy there worked with the Pentagon on translating stuff for Oak Ridge and the Pentagon, and he told us the Russians invented computers in the 50s that were ternary logic, and they have never crashed. So ternary logic bypasses the Hegelian dialectic, and also, you know, there's two spiritual forces in the world, good and evil. Well, the Illuminati and the elites, I hate that word, but they always try to confuse where the good and where the evil is, because they're parasites and cause confusion and whatever. But the way you always work with evil is forced choices. Those farmers in Colorado had bulldozers, and they stopped the Forest Service, you know, from shutting their road down.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a co-op here. I think I told you the only victory of the raw milk people against the health department in the whole country. Our governor, Matt Bevin, has the YouTube this week. He caught a lot of flack from Salon.com, that communist internet place, and a lot of Huffington Post and all that, because
right.
He came out and said bloodshed may be necessary to defend conservative values. And that's the same thing Thomas Jefferson said about the Tree of Liberty, is said with blood.
Yeah.
But forced choices, if you use forced choices with evil, even the pretend, you know, you can create a scenario that they're afraid to do anything. Look what happened with Black Lives Matter. I think that is really a symbolic thing, because they just decided Europe is going to charge $14 billion for Apple to cough up new taxes.
Oh, yeah.
Then yesterday... Yeah, yesterday, the Justice Department here, if they call it that, decided that Deutsche Bank is going to have to cough up $14 billion. So they're playing tit for tat. This Black Lives Matter is really a threat of the black nobility, as Chapman used to call them, threatening the bankers. The bankers are being threatened because they're going to tax them for carbon credits. So I think that's what this Black Lives Matter thing is really about. It's the city of London getting threatened that the bankers are going to have to cough this up for a universal UN carbon tax all over the world.
No, I don't know about that, because if you look at who is backing Black Lives Matter, it's a lot of this is Soros' funds. You know, Open Society
That's
Foundation
true,
and all
he's
that.
He's short the market, and a lot of the bankers are desperate for their jobs. They want to keep the can going down the road as long as they can, so they always fight each other, you know.
Well, I kind of think
that the
carbon economy, the carbon currency that they're trying to push, which, you know, back a while ago, the idea of a technate is what they called it, technate. Would be the currency unit.
Yeah.
That would actually, I think that they were trying to build that to replace the current system with that technate currency. And I just saw...
I think that's their use. Yeah.
I just saw another article, by the way, that something about the big banks, the central bank, the Federal Reserve even, I believe, if I can find it again, maybe I'll cover it before we go off the air. But they were talking about using their own cryptocurrency, which we've always believed.
They've got these in the wings in case the SDR didn't work, and the SDR isn't going to work because it's just a basket of fiat baskets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think they got all these options out there to see what'll work. But carbon is the block, building block of life, you know. So,
yeah.
They've tried this before, and it fell through in Chicago with Gore's thing on the commodity exchange in Chicago. You know, all of these things they're trying to push really have no substance to it. But, you know, we do have victories, and Deutsche Bank has come out and said, you know, they are going to fight this and whatever, and they're the most bank in most danger anywhere in the world. So how come they're coming out? They must have the goods on people, just like the Clinton Foundation has the goods on the other people. Bob Chapman used to say the key to all of this is at the top, all intelligence groups work together.
Yeah.
So they've all got the secrets on each other, and they're all against us. But anytime we can bypass the two evils and any kind of duality by looking at alternatives outside the box, and you know, setting up situations that force them to do things. And I think it's really significant that God is working on 9/11 to have Hillary have her fainting fit, whatever it was.
Yeah, we're living in some very, very interesting times, aren't we?
God is working in this world, and it would happen on 9/11 with all of their cover-ups, and her cover gets blown on it at a 9/11 event. Wow, and also 9/11 means danger, and they might come out with Bernie, and then they say they'll have a real difference, Bernie against Trump. Well, then, you know, they might try to push him in because of all the millennials voting and all their socialist education. That's what
yeah.
I think might happen.
I sure wouldn't want to see Bernie pushing his brand of communism either. Oh, man, we're
absolutely.
One thing about it, Dan, it's definitely fun to watch, isn't it? If the stakes weren't so high,
it's all on the local level.
Yeah, exactly. Amen.
It's all on the local level, like you say.
Hey, I gotta take the break, but thank you, my friend. God bless.
God bless you.
All right, we'll talk later. Bye bye. All right,
okay,
we gotta take the top of the hour, the bottom of the hour break, folks. We'll be back in a moment. Final segment of Government America, final half hour straight ahead. Please don't go away. All right, we're back. This is Government America. Earlier we were talking about the Iranian deal. I want to come back to that just for a second. The State Department apparently has no idea how many Americans are imprisoned in Iran. This is incredible at a time when they're sending billions and billions and billions of dollars of our cash to that country. They still haven't bothered to find out how many. You know, they have no idea, no intentions. You know, all of the we shouldn't be doing anything with Iran until any prisoners that are being held are released.
Just this year, we've seen the seizure of our sailors. We've seen a doubling, according to the Pentagon's numbers, in the number of naval confrontations over this time last year. Now they're threatening to blow our planes out of the sky. We've seen a very aggressive series of ballistic missile tests from the regime. There's more American hostages in Iran. And so I just wonder how you can possibly assess the evolution of this relationship, in which the landmark moment is the finalization of this nuclear deal, and rule out the possibility that, in fact, one of the byproducts of this deal has been to embolden the regime to worse rather than better behavior.
Well, we always were very clear that their objective in reaching a nuclear agreement with Iran was to prevent them from obtaining a nuclear weapon, which we, I think all agree, would only exacerbate the threat in the region of Iran, as well as exacerbate tensions in the region and pose a real national security risk to the United States. We never said that this was going to solve all of Iran's bad behavior. And in fact, you know, we would like, as much as we would like to see Iran's behavior change in the region, we've not seen a significant shift.
In fact, you have seen a shift. It's gotten worse.
Well,
am I correct about that?
Well, again, I don't have all the facts and figures in front of me, but we have seen some disturbing, as you cited, trends. And I think two things. One is that, in our view, it only makes the significance of the nuclear agreement that much more important, because the last thing anyone would want to see in the region is a nuclear-armed Iran. But it also shows that Iran has a choice to make, and if it wants to engage further with the West, following on the engagement that led to the nuclear agreement, more productively and play a more constructive role in the region, or continue with, as I said, its bad behavior. Thus far, we've not seen that shift to a constructive engagement.
But you can't rule out that, in fact, this deal has served as a cause for this more aggressive posture.
I mean, I can't rule that out. It's just, you know, we've, you know, Iran, like many countries, has an internal...
Okay, did you hear that, folks? This actually wasn't the clip that I thought it was, but he just admitted that this Iran deal could very well be the basis for the additional aggression that Iran is showing.
Has served as a
cause. Okay, let me back it up just a little bit more here.
More productively and play a more constructive role in the region, or continue with, as I said, its bad behavior. Thus far, we've not seen that shift to a constructive engagement.
But you can't rule out that, in fact, this deal has served as a cause for this more aggressive posture.
I mean, I can't rule that out. It's just, you know, we've, you know, Iran, like many countries, has an internal political process that's defined by a lot of different dynamics. But I can't give an assessment one way or the other in that regard.
So is it correct that you're saying that the nuclear deal is important because Iran would be doing all the same stuff that it's doing now
and pursuing a nuclear weapon
and with a nuke? Is that
right,
what you're
or
saying?
Possibly with a nuke, or at least pursuing a nuclear weapon.
But I think you're right that they have shown a willingness to engage with the West, but it's to engage militarily, isn't it? Huh?
Well, I mean, they are a member of the ISSG, the International Serious Support Group. They have signed on to the goal of that organization, which is to end the conflict and lead to a political transition in Syria. We continue to look for signs that they're willing to engage constructively across the board.
That's the only thing that they've done in terms of engagement, or except for the military stuff that...
Yeah.
You've been talking about that's pretty slim picking, isn't it?
Well, again, I'm not here to advocate on behalf of the Iranian government and their engagement.
All right, enough of that. Speaking of the State Department, here we see from dailycaller.com, John Kerry's State Department funneled millions to his daughter's nonprofit. So more corruption. More than $9 million of the Department of State money has been funneled through the Peace Corps to a nonprofit foundation started and run by Secretary of State John Kerry's daughter, documents obtained by the Daily Caller News Foundation show. The Department of State funded a Peace Corps program created by Dr. Vanessa Kerry, and officials from both agencies' records show the Peace Corps then awarded the money without competition to a nonprofit Kerry creation created for the program. Initially, the Peace Corps awarded Kerry's group, now called Seed Global Health, with a three-year contract worth $2 million of State Department money. On September 10, 2012, documents show her father was then chairman of the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, which oversees both the Department of State and the Peace Corps. So, more corruption, more... Folks, it's just all of its rot. This is why the federal government is not going to be your answer, regardless of who's elected. It doesn't matter in that regard. If we don't get it back, if we will not get it back unless we get it back, starting with the states. And the states have to control the federal government. But it's getting harder and harder and harder. Moving along, we see from Middle East to U.S. troops forced to flee Syrian town after FSA rebel threats. FSA, that's Free Syrian Army. Weren't those the ones that we were backing over there? Weren't those the ones that the State Department was funding? And you mean the they're now issuing threats against our soldiers? Uh-oh. U.S. Special Forces, they say, were reportedly forced to flee a town in northern Syria after Free Syrian Army fighters threatened to slaughter them for their, quote, invasion, according to videos and reports posted on social media Friday. This is just, I'm not going to read the rest of this article, but this just goes to show you why we should not be involved in these wars in the first place. Because you don't know who your enemy is, and loyalties are very flimsy. You can't guarantee loyalty. Well, they can't guarantee our loyalty either. But what are we getting for the money? I'll tell you what we're getting. We're getting nothing. We're getting poorer. Except for the few that are employed in the military-industrial complex industries. They're doing okay. And then we got this idiotic move. Here we see from the Telegraph, 9/11 victims could be allowed to sue Saudi Arabia over alleged ties to attack. Now, if, first of all, this assumes, of course, that Saudi Arabia was behind 9/11. We know the Project for a New American Century. We know the war, the entire thing was planned in advance. We know that key neocon operatives, including Despot Dick and Jeb Bush and Louis Libby and who was that other pond scum that I'm trying to think of? All these characters planned this out a full year. It was all that was published in the Project for a New American Century. That Rebuilding America's Defenses report was published a full year before 9/11 was carried out and before the November 2000 elections. So they were planning this before George W. Bush ever took office. And so we're going to allow victims to sue Saudi Arabia? For what purpose, listeners? But the more important question is, what happens if this goes forward? Who's going to enforce the lawsuit? Oh, I guess that would have to be your international partners, wouldn't it? So we're going to cede more sovereignty to an international tribunal, international court, an international body? This is just another attack on our national sovereignty. That's the bottom line. Moving along here in the interest of time. Here we see from The Hill. We started the show off today talking about the news organizations, or the ones the propaganda outlets masquerading as news organizations. Increasingly, people are getting their news from places like Facebook. TheHill.com, Facebook steps up fight against, quote, fake news. Well, what's going to be fake news? I guess Facebook will determine that, won't they? Facebook says it is working to fight the spread of fake news on its platform after false stories claiming the 9/11 attacks were a conspiracy. Well, wait a minute. Didn't somebody have to come together and talk about doing that? Well, even if you believe the official story that it was 19 Arabs with box cutters, it would still be a conspiracy. But they're saying that they're going to censor these stories. See, because it's fake news. So Facebook's going to be the sole arbiter of what you see and what you don't see. This is why you don't need to be using Facebook. I tried Facebook back some time ago, and you know what? Deleting my account was the best thing I ever did. Because the whole time I was there, I got this really creepy feeling. The whole time I was there, it wasn't warm and fuzzy. It was, why does this site exist? And why are they inviting me to share every detail of my life? And why would I want to do that? Incredible. Anyway, moving along. And Facebook had a satellite that they were launching into outer space. I think it's God's provision that the thing blew up. I'm sure it was probably insured. And he'll probably launch another one at some point in the future. But they were trying to... there's this internet.org website, which Mark Zuckerberg and the Facebook group were trying to implement on Africa. And that's what the, you know, we're supposed to believe that they were actually going to provide internet service via the satellite for the African people. And that, according to this article from the New Eastern Outlook, that is not what they were doing. They were going to provide a very scaled-down internet, a very controlled internet for the people of Africa. In other words, they control it all. Facebook wants to be the arbiter of information, and that's what it's all about. That thing was an intelligence operation from the beginning. It was funded by a Bilderberger, Peter Thiel, and so what do we expect? We also see from Countercurrent News, Colin Powell leaked emails reveal Israel has 200 nuclear bombs. Now, for those of you who've been following the broadcast, that shouldn't be a surprise to you, because we've talked about Israel's hidden arsenal of nuclear weapons. As a matter of fact, up on Sweet Liberty, in the Israel section, sweetliberty.org, we have a map, an interactive map, which was originally put out by MSNBC. And this map provides the information on exactly where these nuclear weapons and storage facilities are located. So this isn't a secret. Even the establishment media covers it. But we're supposed to believe that Israel's just, needs the United States to back them. Go fight all these. We've got to be their big bad brother to take care and settle all their differences for them, because those evil, evil Palestinians, you know, the ones that throw the rocks at the Israeli tanks as they're bulldozing the Palestinians' homes. Yeah, those evil Palestinians are such a huge threat. Unbelievable. When they're sitting over there with all these nuclear weapons. But they buy the politicians, folks. The American-Israeli Political Action Committee, AIPAC, all these bribes come to our country, to our Congress critters. And then the foreign aid goes out, and goes back to them. They get huge returns on that investment. And this is not going to stop regardless of who is in office, unfortunately. Until the people wake up and realize we're not getting anything good for our money, folks. I've been studying the situation in Venezuela, and I still strongly suspect U.S. intervention in that country and economic warfare as being at least one of the causes, if not the primary cause, of the starvation that's going on there right now. It's a devastating situation for the people, but there is an article in the Miami Herald. Finally, South America puts pressure on Venezuela. They say the decision by key South American countries to send an ultimatum to Venezuelan's authoritarian regime, demanding that it respect democratic rules, went almost unnoticed in U.S. media, but it may be the region's most important diplomatic event in recent years. The 34-country Organization of American States. There it is again, ladies and gentlemen. Secretary General Luis Almagro had already issued a report in June stating that Venezuela President Nicolas Maduro is violating basic democratic principles. But Maduro claimed that the Almagro report was a personal initiative and a U.S. imperialistic scheme, stressing that the United States is a leading member of the OAS. Now, for the first time, a key group of Latin American countries that does not include the United States has not only demanded that Maduro restore the rule of law, but also issued an ultimatum to do so by December 1st or face Venezuela's suspension from the trading bloc. So they are putting pressure on Venezuela. Already, there is a rift and an attempt to put pressure there. And then you have the store shelves empty. And one thing that's kind of interesting to me is that there is a think tank called the Council on Hemispheric Affairs that adds credence to this, because the official story is that it's the socialist government of Venezuela, the communist government there, their management of the money or mismanagement, which has caused this whole thing. But it's just kind of interesting now that, they seem to back up what, you know, my line of thinking is, because on the one hand, you got communist systems don't work. They can't work. They fail all the time. But when you have our government poking its nose into the foreign affairs of other countries, constantly screwing around with the system, constantly doing things to manipulate things, forcing regime change, forcing revolutions, you got to ask some serious questions about this. Just sharing a little bit from this article, they go on to talk about the official story of how this all works. And they say, the alternative thesis within Venezuela itself, however, this analysis, the official story, is just one of two competing narratives, both of which are discussed and taken seriously in discussions of policy, governance, and economic dynamics. The economic mismanagement thesis is the natural position taken by the Venezuelan opposition and its allies. But the fact that it is practically the only narrative reported in the English language press misrepresents the intricacies of Venezuela's economic problems while revealing how Western media heavily favor the opposition's analysis, often by its own admission. There's also another narrative favored by the government and the pro-Chavista social movement and civil society sectors, which is important to stress, are independent of the government. This perspective can loosely be called the economic war thesis. It explains the crisis in terms of the economic and social dynamics at play outside policy and governmental action. It holds that business sectors friendly to the opposition are waging an aggressive and protracted campaign of economic sabotage to deliberately stir up social unrest to destabilize and discredit the governing Chavista bloc, and in the ensuing chaos, bring about an end to the PSUV government and the installation of a new one made up of opposition parties. The central pillars of the economic war thesis are that these hostile sectors have been engaging in acts such as hoarding and price speculation and have purposefully generated scarcity in pursuit of calculated chaos. Now, it goes on from there, and I'm not going to read. This article is very lengthy, but they do say the U.S. mainstream media, overwhelmingly owned by large corporations and loyal to their interests, naturally reflects and promulgates the ideological contours of the first world view, meaning the economic mismanagement theory. And they say, herein lies the explanation for why the debate has been so narrow, so inordinately skewed toward the opposition's account of the situation, and so disregarding of the complexities and subtleties of the discourse regarding the admittedly tragic and desperate circumstances in which the Venezuelan people find themselves. They say that in this article, they talk about how you can't dismiss the Venezuelan government is saying regarding the influence, I guess, for lack of a better word, of the United States government and the forces from outside the country to try to manipulate things and cause them to spiral into chaos. And in fact, there has been a history there. I see there was something back in 2002, April 9th, Venezuelan general strike extended, where they were talking about these business leaders. Millions of Venezuelans have been told not to go to work on Wednesday as union leaders decide to extend a 24-hour strike. The country's vital oil business has been thrown into turmoil after the strike was launched on Tuesday. And keep in mind, this was back in 2002, in protest at a new board of directors for the state oil company. Business leaders, those are the ones that they were talking about in that last piece, business leaders who, with unions, devised Tuesday's all-out strike, agreed to observe the second day of stoppage. But earlier, President Hugo Chavez denied anything was out of the ordinary, saying, "What strike?" Anyway, it's the business sector, apparently, that is influenced or has some, the West, you know, the United States, apparently has some influence with the business sector. And the theory goes is that this could be how they're manipulating everything there in Venezuela. But it's a very tragic situation. You can't help but feel compassion for those people as they go to stand in lines, very long lines, and sometimes all day at a line at a grocery store, only to find out that there's nothing there for them to get. Many of these people have children, you know. And my question is, regardless of what the cause is, how long is it going to be before we have this kind of situation here in the United States? Given the fact that we have all of this genetic manipulation of food, we've got bear being merged now. We got the merger going on.
Stick with the world of business now. After a long courting period, Bayer or Bayer, tomato, tomato, anyway, finally saying yes to Monsanto.
That's right, Brent. It was a struggle.
Okay, I don't
but
have
now
time
Bayer
to play this whole
Bayer
piece. But Bayer and Monsanto have had their wedding. They've now combined. And now we got other mergers on the horizon as well, as more and more of our food is being controlled by a small number of multinational corporations. What could possibly go wrong with this, ladies and gentlemen? I'll tell you, the United States can become Venezuela very, very quickly. And I have every reason to believe that that's what they're planning, given the fact that all this is being allowed and even promoted to go on. There's a lot of other things I could cover, but we're just about out of time. So I guess I'll leave it there. A lot of Agenda 21 news that I had, information, but maybe we'll get to some of that next week. In the meantime, pray for this republic. Do what you can to restore it. I appreciate each and every one of you. God bless you, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.